Can you hear the music, Robert? Yes, I can.
What's your favorite scary movie?
What's the boogeyman?
You're gonna need a bigger potion.
We're gonna press on, and we're gonna have the happiest Christmas.
I live in Notting Hill, you live in Beverly Hills.
Can you introduce me as Joker?
I'll never turn to the dark side.
Enter Benoit Blanc.
I am the father.
I'm your Uncle Buck.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Phil at the Movies. I'm your host, Phil Walsh, and here today with a triple feature to get you in the Halloween mood as we are in the midst of spooky season. I guess we can consider this a bonus episode to kick off your Monday. As always, I want to say thank you for tuning in or watching this show on YouTube and being a part of this ongoing cinematic journey. Your support, your encouragement, your embrace of this show means the world to me. And I know I say this a lot, but I mean it from the bottom of my heart. Thank you all so very, very much. Now today, I have not one, not two, but three films to review and recommend. The first one, my long-awaited review of Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice, this is the much-anticipated sequel to the Tim Burton, Michael Keaton classic. It took a long time to get this film made and developed, but certainly it was worth the wait. The juice is loose. Beetlejuice is back better than ever. Michael Keaton returns seamlessly into the role that really capitalized him and made him, I mean, he was already a well-known actor and well-established for his comedic roles, but this one prior to Batman in 1989 really launched his career in a big way. And it's just wonderful to see him back, clearly playing a role that he enjoys and relishes. It's like he never left. In a world where we are so inundated with legacy sequels and 20-plus year follow-ups to classic or cult films, this one, while acting as both a sequel and to some extent a legacy sequel, does not feel too on the nose. It feels organic and original, and I think that is because, A, it took all this time to craft the story, and Tim Burton, the director, creator, was invested in this movie. This was not just a cash-in project. Clearly, this was a labor of love from the return of Michael Keaton to the set design to all the new characters and cast members added to the film. And I just want to say right off the top, because I think this is something that doesn't get enough traction, the use of practical effects in this movie is applause-worthy. That, to me, makes it stand out, because certainly with the advances in computer technology and digital filmmaking, you could have easily made the world of Beetlejuice that much more sort of inorganic in a way and done it through the use of computer imagery. I'm glad that Burton held back on that restraint and really utilized what made that first film so special, which was the use of practical effects. I think there's such a craftsmanship in that technique, and it's certainly underappreciated and, frankly, utilized by a lot of modern filmmakers. So that was a major plus. But in addition, of course, Keaton is phenomenal. He's in the film the right amount of time, which, again, there's always that tendency when you have a character who really becomes the breakout of a movie to overexploit him. And I was a little concerned that maybe they would overuse Beetlejuice, but that is not the case. He's in it about as much as he was in the original film, which is kind of surprising given that the title was Beetlejuice. This one is Beetlejuice Beetlejuice, but he's in it about the same amount of time, which is not as much as you would think. Yes, I don't remember exactly the amount of screen time, but it's comparable to the original, which was around like 20, 25 minutes or so. But in addition, you have Catherine O'Hara returning. She is on point as usual. You have the wonderful Winona Ryder, who is back in the role that, I mean, she had done a number of films beforehand, but this one I feel is sort of iconic in a way, and it's great to see her return seamlessly as well. But perhaps the big breakout star, though I wouldn't even say she's a breakout star because she's already an established actress and has a huge following, but it is Jenna Ortega. She is the new addition to the film, and she just lives brilliantly in this world. She already was in Wednesday, another Tim Burton project based on the classic Addams Family TV show. She was wonderfully funny and weird in that. She's at a whole other level in this film. She just works in the gothic, macabre, dark world of Tim Burton. And this kind of felt like a crescendo of all of their past efforts. But the movie is hilarious. It's all the charm of the original film. And yet it feels organic. There was a story to tell that wasn't just, well, let's cash in on a sequel. Let's just, you know, make a movie. There was a real impetus and design to this film, and I applaud that. I'm expecting, based on the box office results, this is already the number one movie for Warner Brothers this year, surpassing Dune Part 2. I am expecting there will be a Beetlejuice to sort of complete this possible trilogy, but for a film that certainly had a lot of hype and anticipation, it definitely lived up to those expectations, and it's just a fun, quasi-family-friendly Halloween film. So, I mean, if you're not looking for a quote-unquote scary movie, this is a great one for the entire family. And certainly if you are a fan of the original Beetlejuice, this is a worthy follow-up and kind of a nice companion piece to that original film. So Beetlejuice, worth the wait, and was glad if I only was able to share my thoughts with you on that particular film. But moving over to the other side of the equation, another Warner Brothers film. This is another one, a much anticipated movie, the remake, I guess we could call it that, of the classic TV film Salem's Lot. This, of course, based on the Stephen King novel of the same name. Salem's Lot. This was a movie that was in a long production. It took years to bring it to the screen, and then there was a question of whether or not this film would even be released. It was apparently sitting on the shelf over at Warner Brothers for a while, and then finally was released on streaming, which sort of raised a few eyebrows whether or not the film sort of had a worthy quality or whatnot. And I must say, this film, I was looking forward to it because I have such a high esteem for the original film, which I have to say, for a TV movie, really has a theatrical cinematic quality to it. With a bigger budget and presumably more ability to use effects and storytelling techniques, this film was a disappointment. It's not a full-on travesty of a movie, but it is underwhelming. And I would say that there's a reason why it went straight to streaming, which, you know, we can debate the merits of that on another day. But this was a film where, you know, maybe if it had a theatrical run because of the Halloween season, maybe it would have found an audience and done respectively well. But ultimately, this is a vampire movie with no bite. Everything about the original film, even given the limitations of it being a TV movie, it just doesn't compare. This film feels almost claustrophobic in a way, which is sort of odd given that you have presumably a bigger budget and a stage in which to work. This film sort of loses the grandiose and epic quality of the original. The vampire Barlow, I think, is even scarier in the original. This one, it felt similar to a trap that a lot of vampire movies make now, which is they try to overcompensate or overdo the theatrics. And in the case of the original, the simplistic way is always the best execution. And this film just is rudderless. It's not bad. It's certainly, if you were looking for a sort of a quick horror film to watch this time of year, it will pass the time, but it is certainly not one that is going to be probably worthy of a much mention or remember after the Halloween season. But yeah, Salem's Lot, I would say a lot of fang, but certainly no bite, or maybe no fang at all, depending on how you look at it. But then jumping over to the third option, and this is a film that was released on Netflix. It is directed by Anna Kendrick, also stars her as well. The film is Woman of the Hour, and this is actually based on a true story in which a woman was on a TV show from the 70s called The Dating Game. And during the program, the way it was set up, you bring out a three male contestants, and you have one female contestant, and the three men are hidden behind a divider, and then the woman asks questions to each of the contestants, or you know, bachelors, if you will. And ultimately, you know, she picks which one she thinks she's most compatible with. Well, as it turned out, the person that she picked ended up being a serial killer. And she didn't know that at the time, but he had quite a track record prior to this show. And the film sort of works with that framework, intercutting with both flashbacks and sort of flash forwards, depicting this serial killer's murderous rampage across the United States from New York, California, even into the mountains of Wyoming. It is a gripping film, and while it necessarily doesn't reinvent the wheel, not that it necessarily had to, but it is highly suspenseful. The acting in it is intense. It's an effective thriller in terms of the suspense and the chills, and hats off to Anna Kendrick, who, as I said, both stars and directs this film, making her directorial debut. And what a way to start off potentially a new part of her career, because this is a riveting film, and I found myself sort of on the edge of my seat, which is not always an occurrence with these kind of films, but just the way that it was done, and I think sort of the way she captures the brutality, where she's not sort of documenting everything, a lot of the scenes are left to implication, but it's just the ominous tone she's able to inject into the film, and the use of cinematic language. It was really well done and gripping from start to finish. So there we go. Two films to recommend for you. One I'm sort of on the fence about, but you know, I will still give it a recommendation. So Beetlejuice, highly recommend that film. Salem's Lot, certainly if you're a fan of the original or the novel, I would say check it out. Even if you have no experience or have ever read or seen the TV film, I would say check it out if you are looking for a spooky Halloween-centric movie, because it does sort of check some of the boxes, but it was underwhelming, to say the least. And then lastly, Woman of the Hour, highly recommend this film. Another great suspense thriller to cap off a year that has had a number of these kind of movies. And this one particularly, because it is telling a real-life horror, which again sometimes is a case of truth of being stranger than fiction. But there we go. There are my three films for you today to kind of kick off this final stretch before the big day of October 31st. I, of course, will be back on Friday, as promised, with a review and retrospective of Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. But until then, thank you all for tuning in, and I'll be back on Friday, where we'll do this all over again for the love of movies.
copyright material used or referenced in this show belong to the rightful owners and is made possible by the Fair Use Act. Thank you for listening to Phil at the Movies.